This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what is the whole network galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds, for whatever you love. Infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
From athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You're listening to the Pennsylvania Woodsman, powered by Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network.
This show is driven to provide relatable hunting and outdoor content in the Keystone State and surrounding Northeast.
On this show, you'll hear an array of perspectives from biologists and industry professionals
to average Joes with a lifetime of knowledge.
All centered around values aiming to be better outdoorsmen and women,
both in the field as well as home and daily life.
No clicks, no self-interest. Just the light in the pursuit of creation.
And now, your host, the man who's too good to stop for a roadkill deer to check it out, Mitchell Shirk.
All righty, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Pennsylvania Woodsman Podcast. It's a sad week, and yet it's an exciting week. And it's sad because archery season's over. Archery season is the season I look forward to all year long. It's almost always my favorite. And yet, I am actually glad it's over because I've been looking for the next season. I've been looking forward to bear season, and I'm actually really excited about rifle deer season. I've kind of had this weird shift going on for me. I had a rough archery season. It wasn't hard. I mean, I was able to get on game. I saw game. It was plentiful in that regard. I had a mentally challenging archery season, and I haven't talked a lot about my hunting season. There's a reason for that. I did some dumb stuff. I made some poor choices. I made just flat-out mistakes that were outside of my control, other than I just didn't perform to the ability that I wanted, and I just had a mentally challenging hunting season, and earlier in the year, I was just not in the mental frame of mind to talk about it, and anything I would have talked about would have sounded like I was complaining and gloom, despair, agony on me, and I really didn't want to do that and really be negative. But I was just down, just because things didn't go my way, right? I didn't get to do the hunting that I thought I was going to, as far as the time and places at times. The hunting I did do, I made some poor shots. I was really, really unhappy with myself. Made some poor shot decisions. And it just weighed on me mentally to the point where I'm like, man, I think I just need to hang the bow up this year. I can't believe I'm saying that, but I think I need to hang the bow up and revisit bow season in the future, revisit bow season next year. And I'm going to really focus and look my excitement towards camp, towards rifle season, towards, you know, some of these things that we get to do with a rifle that's a little bit different and unique here in Pennsylvania. And I'm excited. I'm in a great looking forward to it all. And I wanted to do something this week that was going to ramp that up, right? Because this weekend is opening day of Pennsylvania's rifle bear season. Special time, a lot of history, a lot of traditions. You know, this is cool. This is my 20th year going to bear camp. So I'm 31 years old. This will be my 20th year because I started going when I was 12. I've never missed a year. I almost missed a year one time. You guys will laugh at this. So back when I was in college, my girlfriend, who is now my wife, there was a party that her family was holding that it was going to be the first day of bear season, and it was like 3 hours from camp, and there was no way I was going to be able to go, and I was going to be the outstanding boyfriend, and I was going to suck up and swallow my pride, and I was going to go bear hunting, or I wasn't going to go bear hunting. I was going to go to this party. My wife was, at the time, a field hockey coach for high school, and they made it to the state championship, and they actually won the state championship that year. But when they went to the state championship, it just so happened that the state championship game was the first day of bear season. And it was also the same day and time as this party. And she was not going to be going. And she literally said to me, she's like, if I'm not going, you don't have to go. And that's all I needed to hear. So I went to bear camp. So I'm not saying I'm proud of that, but it's a little bit funny. That was the only time I came that was close. I remember when I was first with my wife, back when we were dating, and I shot a bear when I was in college the one year, and it was my second bear at that point in my life. And the following year, you know, she hunted with me when we first started dating. She shot some deer. She's a heck of a shot. She just didn't really have the interest to keep going. But I remember that next year after I shot that bear, we were buying hunting licenses, and you know, I said to the clerk at the register what I wanted. You know, I want my archery license, I want my muzzle loader stamp, and I want my bear tag. And she's like, why are you getting another bear tag? I said, I go bear hunting every year. This is a tradition. It was just, for some reason, I fell into the luck, and I got one last year, and it doesn't always happen that way. So that was just kind of a fun memory. I've had a lot of cool memories over bear camp. I mean, I talk about a few of them in this episode, but there's a lot I don't, and I think it'd be really cool to kind of just do a reminiscing episode. And I had originally planned to do that until I connected with this week's guest to talk about the episode we're going to have. And I'm really glad we did. It was a fun episode. You know, he's got a lot of experience. In fact, I would say he's got a lot more experience and a better mind wrapped around bear hunting than I do. So it was a privilege and an honor to be able to interview him and just have a conversation and kind of get his perspective on a lot of things bear hunting. But I'm just humbled that I get to go to bear camp. I've had so many good experiences. I've had some bad experiences. I've learned a lot. And man, I think about some of the bear that we've got over the years. You know, we've averaged probably one bear a year in the camp. And, you know, a lot of those years when I was a driver, you know, we're putting, you know, 10, 15, 20, 25, I don't know how many miles. I mean, sometimes it's 10 miles a day on as a driver. A lot of time I would say that first day is a lot of miles and covering. And we've done it in rain. We've done it in snow. I think some cool memories in snow. I mean, I remember my first bear I ever killed was in about 10 inches of snow. And what a sight that was to see that bear when I first shot it. You know, I think I've told this story sometimes. When I was 13 years old, I shot a bear. I was It was the first year up. You know, when I was 12, I sat with Dad, and when I was 13, he said, "Do you want to sit with me, or do you want to sit by yourself?" And of course, I said, "Well, I'll sit by myself," even though that was highly not approved by our state regulations. But I was fortunate enough that that first year, I had a bear come out to me, and just seeing that coming through the laurel in the snow was a special, special memory. You know, that next year, my dad finally harvested his first bear, and I remember being a driver on that side hill, walking out that side hill, and, you know, getting closer and getting closer, and all of a sudden, that bang, all across the mountains, the way those bullets echo. Just a crazy, crazy experience. And, I mean, we had years where we drive every side hill known to that area, and man, we couldn't get a bear to save our life. We couldn't see him. We didn't get any shooting, or maybe we'd get one missed opportunity and that was it. And you do all that work for nothing. And then we've had years where you go up and it's like, you can't let a bush unturned that there might be a bear behind it. And, you know, I've had experiences where like 3, 4, 5, 6, I think the most was 7 bear in one drive, and it's like just mass chaos, and there's so much shooting, and it's just something that, even if you do group big hunts like that for deer season, it's just not the same. There's something about that group bear hunt that has just been very special to me, and I look forward to it every year. I'm honored to do it. I'm thankful to do it, that I got a good place and people and fellowship and camaraderie. And, you know, this week's episode, I'm talking with Clint Stout, and he has, you know, grown up doing a lot of the same things. And Clint's a leader at the place that he goes, and, you know, has a bigger group, and they cover some big areas, and they've had some good success. And, you know, we talk about food for bear and scouting a little bit. We talk about mountains and terrain. We go into some other topics. We go into tradition of bear camp and bear camp stories and how the dynamic of camp tradition has changed over time, and it's an evolving process. It was a really fun conversation. I hate singling out specific episodes and specific people, because I've had so many really great conversations and great podcasts, and it's one of the things that's fun. But man, this was a really, really fun one for me. This was a fun conversation because I could relate to Clint. He was great to talk to, shared a wealth of information. And if you're a brand new bear hunter, you're going to be able to pick up on stuff that will help you in this episode 100%. But if you're somebody that's bear hunted your whole life, I think there's things about this episode you're going to appreciate. I think there's perspective that it's going to make you think. You may disagree with some of our opinions. You may agree with some of our opinions. You may reiterate thoughts. It may spark new thoughts. I just thought this was a really, really fun bear hunting conversation. So rather than talk about it, let's get to it. And I have to do a little bit of housekeeping. Radix Hunting, if you guys have been using trail cameras, I really suggest checking out the Radix cameras. Now, you've got a lot of options of gear from Radix. If you go to radixhunting.com, you can see the opportunity of blinds, tree stands, cameras, camera accessories. If you're in a state where baiting is allowed, their feeders, a lot of good quality products. I've really enjoyed using their cameras specifically, but their tree stands are silent, quiet, and I love their hang-on setups. Their blinds are quality products. Check out the line of gear that Radix has to offer. And with that, let's get into talking bear hunting. Oh, I almost forgot. Little Mountain Outfitters. Use the code WOODSMAN10 on littlemountainoutfitters.com, and you can get 10% off your next purchase at Little Mountain Outfitters. Supports local business, supports this podcast. A lot of great gear, not just archery hunting gear. They got a lot of gear available to you, and they'll ship it to your door. And if you don't want to do that, you want to go see them in person, go to Richland, Pennsylvania, and check out littlemountainoutfitters.com. Now, let's get to this episode. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is one of my favorite times of year. This is bear season. We are leading into Pennsylvania's bear season. It's a tradition that I have done since I'm 12 years old. This is going to be my 20th year going, so that tells you I'm 31. I'm still young and dumb, but 20th year going, and I was going to do an episode talking about bear camp and bear hunting stories, and the perfect storm happened, and somebody who else has done it a little bit longer than I have, and I was glad to have you on, Mr. Clint Stout, thank you for coming on the show to yap about all things Black Bear. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on here. Look forward to it.
So you said you've been following along, probably following in families and friends' footsteps for a very, very young age. So I'm just kind of curious, when you think back to when you started hunting, bear hunting, like this is where I'm coming from. I remember when I was a kid, Dad would go to bear camp, and I could not wait until Dad came home and told the stories from bear camp. So when you, like, what is your earliest recollection of bear camp and bear hunting when you were a kid?
Yeah, that was kind of the same thing for me. And really the first part, he actually let me come, whether it was 1 or 2 years in advance prior to hunting, to just be at the camp and experience that. And it's grown since then. I don't think we would have 10-year-olds at our camp now just because of the amount of people. But that was my first experience, is going down, just being around the guys, hearing them talk, hearing kind of the strategies and the excitement of the tradition of hunting. You know, whether it was bear or deer camp, didn't really matter. But bear camp was kind of always our big camp rather than buck camp, necessarily.
Now, you grew up in central part of the state, I believe, north central part of the state. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, I did a poor job of allowing you to introduce yourself. I jumped right into bear hunting stuff, but I think bear hunting is one of those things I get so excited about, I want to jump to the point right away. So how has bear hunting molded you through the years as a hunter?
I'm actually from Jefferson County, but we've always had a camp. I actually lived there for a while in Clinton County, which is one of the counties that's well known for bear hunting. And I think the big thing about bear hunting, and I've been blessed to hunt all over the country and guide in Alaska. I still to this day say this, and it irritates a lot of people, but if you drive and are one of our bear members, bear hunting is the hardest hunting I've ever done. And I've got sheep hunt. I think it molds you in the fact that you have to have an understanding of reading the terrain and topo maps and knowing, you know, whether it's bear or whatever, or how they're going to move, but also being, you know, in fitness, being in shape and being able to handle that. Now, there's all different levels in our group. Obviously, there's people that can't do those positions, but doing that and then learning how to find where bears almost, I consider it almost like a migration for feed, can very much dictate where you're going to bear hunt or how you're going to drive.
Oh, that makes perfect sense to me. it was kind of funny. You know, bear hunting, I think any game species, deer included, I'm going to come at this from the angle of the public land deer hunting hype versus private land. So, right? So I grew up hunting private land. And I did a lot of that and had a lot of fun. And I had a lot of really, really awesome experiences. In fact, you know, at one time, it would have been one thing when I was growing up in school for people to be like, oh, you know, you're just lucky. You get a really good piece of private land hunt. And you know what? I am lucky. But with that luck, I got to experience things at a young age growing up that my friends didn't get to experience for a very long time in life. And it blessed me to the point where I take for granted the experiences and the level of knowledge that I've acquired over the years deer hunting. But when I think about bear hunting, I've gone to bear camp, and our bear camp has been doing drives for a couple days. I don't really know a lot about bear. I like to think I do, but in all reality, I would 20 years and going, I feel like I've only paid attention the last 5 to 10 years, really trying to. And it's an animal that, because you don't see that frequently unless you're living with them and scouting really, really hard. I mean, it's not, a lot of times it's not like deer in the sense. Sometimes it's a really, really long learning curve. Now, from your perspective, what are some of the things that caught you, I guess, stood out to you about learning about this animal over the years as you've hunted it, just because it's a challenging animal?
Yeah, one thing, I guess, yeah, it's always argumentative, what's a smarter animal, but I think that bears are very smart, smarter than deer, and because of that, that also makes a change in it, and they are elusive. But I think understanding their food sources and when they want to hit those specific food sources is super important. And I've had conversations multiple times already this fall about how bears will be in one area just nonstop. And then guys said, all of a sudden, right before archery season, they just disappeared. And I said, well, yeah, I have that happen at one of my places I hunt too in the National Forest. And it's because of the food sources that they're hitting. And then they know what timeline and what food source at that point is going to be the best. And, you know, in that example, it's typically there's tons of acorns maybe like this year. But if there's a lot of hickory, hogback hickory in a certain area, the bears will travel and want to target those before all the squirrels get them, basically gathered up, is my experience. So learning the different food sources and then, you know, how the bears are going to react to weather, which same as deer, but, you know, if you have extreme cold or extreme wet, obviously then they're going to start going to different terrain and possibly be thinking about denning as our rifle season is fairly late for bear. So there's a lot of factors in that, but the food source can vary because, you know, we hunt big woods areas where there is no crop fields. Where I live, you know, if you're dealing with corn, that's a whole different ballgame, and you can plan accordingly also that for that food source too.
And you talking about that, I've had some aha moments over the years. So like my grandfather, it took him 45 years until he killed his first Pennsylvania bear. Now, granted, he hunted during a time when they didn't kill as many. I mean, the bear population when he was hunting in the 60s, 70s, 80s, like at that time, like there was times I think the season had closed and then reopened. And I know there was like once a camp shot a bear, the entire camp was done. Like there was different rules over the years that I don't even remember all of them. But I mean, it was a challenging time. But, you know, he hunted some areas that, you know, he just couldn't come across bear. And I don't think he was a bad hunter, but I do think he hunted them a lot like he hunted deer. And I think that makes it a little bit harder because there's some challenges that and some differences between that critter. But I know so many people that go up, if they're from the southern part of the state, they go up to their northern part of the state cabin or they're invited and they're like, man, I hope this is the year. And it's, you know, they go to that same old, you know, side hill or point or top where they can, you know, have a stand and they see them. I hope this is the year. I've seen them here when I've deer hunted. I hope this is the year. And I used to think, wow, this is such a hard, hard critter. And I started learning that there are little things that put it in your favor. And food was the big one. I mean, talk a little bit more about that, Clint, because I don't think people can realize. I mean, we talk about food with deer, but they have such a diverse diet. And we can get away with a lot of deer hunting. I don't feel the same with bear. What do you think?
Yeah, and I think it's also more seasonal, you know. A deer is a browser, so in the big woods, you know, browse is super important. If there aren't acorns or cherries, you know, then you target browse areas. But for a bear, you know, they can travel such a huge spread, you know, more than a deer. And so if there aren't acorns, you know, in an area, let's say we typically hunt like a 5-square-mile area, if there are hardly any acorns, and then just north, for whatever reason, there's a lot of chestnut or rock oak. I'm going to probably refer to them as rock oak. Bears really love chestnut or rock oak. And so that's probably our number one thing that we target, or I target when I'm scouting, is if I can find, which they typically grow on a southeast or high rocky slope that gets more sun. Often you find them in laurel patches, which everybody always talks about bears being a laurel. And so, you know, I try to target those. Now, if there aren't any of those in a vast area, the bears probably aren't going to travel over 10 or 15 miles to get to them. So at that point, then you're looking for a different food source. You know, certain years you have a lot of red oak. We found great success on river hillsides and targeting in those years where there might not be a lot of acorns. Our particular area had gypsy moss. We had unbelievable, basically we haven't had acorns till this year for 6 years. If we were then targeting grapevines, and the bears will just totally zoom in on an area. They're often thicker, and they'll be eating grapes. And typically where we see grapes, we also see the hickories, and we have had hickory nuts. So that's something, you know, you're looking at grapes. And that's a lot of times you'll see bears earlier in the year in grapes, then they'll transition to rock oak. So that's a factor you have to always be aware of when you're scouting is, okay, if there's all these other food sources, they're going to hit, you know, possibly grapes first, and then they're going to transition to acorns. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff involved with how they flow to where they eat, but they're a very random animal also. So that's one thing, you know, you hear about people patterning, but that's not always the case.
No, I've heard of people talking about patterning bears, and I think if you put in enough time, I'm sure it can be done. But, man, I have really, really struggled to say I've patterned bears. I've just seen trends and areas that they like to frequent, and I think it's just because I've spent bear season after bear season. But, you know, I remember growing up, you know, the first few years that I was going, and I wasn't paying attention. I was just a kid following along behind my dad and all the older guys and learning. And of course, everybody that's in that camp, you know, they all have their own opinions, right? They've seen this from the time they were kids. I mean, there's a fella that is a camp member that's in his 70s that he actually shot a bear when he was 12 years old out of this camp. So there's a ton of history in this camp and really, really cool stories. And with all those generations and experiences, you kind of form opinions, and sometimes opinions differ, and it comes down to, you know, what does people think about weather? What do people think about the terrain or the vegetation? Food comes into the mix. But there's a lot of things that it's really, really hard to take that broad scale conversation and narrow it down into these are the specific things I'm looking for in this order. And I think that's where I found myself really, really struggling over the years, because I remember there were years we'd do drives and, man, it seemed like you couldn't let a laurel bush unturned, right? There was just places where it just seemed like they were everywhere. There was bear scat everywhere. I remember having 6, 7, 8 bear coming out in one drive, and it sounded like a war zone. And then you could do that exact same drive the following year, and you didn't think there was a living creature in that general area. You're like, what's going on? Where the heck are all these bear? And I think the food source is, in my opinion, that's the starting point. Would you agree, or what are some of your other thoughts?
Yeah, I definitely agree. And that's, I think, the hardest thing, you know, if I was to tell any kind of bear camp, is to also realize beyond the area that you hunt, what else is out there. I think that's super important because of exactly what you're saying. If you have one thing and all they're here in October, you better check and see maybe what's another 5 miles out generally. I mean, obviously I'm not saying spend a million hours out there, but see, because we found that one of our biggest, you know, success drives was kind of that situation. It was a valley. We got that 12, 15 inches of snow that one year, I think 2018.
Yep.
And because of the snow, a valley out of the woods and all the rock or chestnut oak, it was just like every bear in the whole area was there. And then if you went out of that area, there was hardly any acorns. So, you know, people might have been seeing bear, which we had heard a mile or two away. And then they said there were no bears there. Well, they had all went into that one area just because of that food source. And we see that a lot. And I think that's super important. And that's where, you know, people that can hunt on cornfields too. If you have a year where there's no acorns, they're obviously going to be at the corn. But if you have corn and then there's a bunch of hickory somewhere, that's when you hear a lot about people seeing bears going to corn at night, only they're back in the woods eating the acorns. And so, you know, you're planning accordingly how to drive those areas.
Right. And I've been somebody that I've focused on acorns, right? Because, I mean, the places that I hunt, I'm looking exactly what you're saying. What's the red oak crop? What's the chestnut oak crop? We don't have a lot of white oaks, and it seems like you never have white oaks last into the rifle bear season anyway. But, I mean, you kind of pay attention. But it seems like anything in the white oak family is going to be earlier a lot of times. Sometimes the rock oak, chestnut oaks are a little bit later. Red oaks, I feel like, are a lot of time what I end up looking for, just because it seems like if there's a good crop of them, they last longer. But, you know, at one time, used to think hickory nuts were a waste. And it wasn't until probably within the last 5 years that I actually found and experienced bears eating hickory nuts. And, you know, I know there's different, I mean, the most common one I think everybody thinks about is a shag bark, but there's a lot of other pig nuts, mocker nuts. I think you named a few others, and there's preferences there. I don't know them, Clint, but you said you're looking for hickory nuts, and that's something I don't hear a lot of people talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's super important. And I would say some of the most successful bear bow hunters that I know too, including the one that I shot, target when they specifically want the hickories, and because they'll produce years of drawn acorns, and it becomes almost, you know, like a food plot or a baiting station, because the bears will just totally target. And I've seen where, you know, five or six different bears are just singling in on a giant hickory tree because it's one of the only ones around. So I think hickories definitely or something that you have to look for. And honestly, you know, looking back and thinking about bears I personally shot, there's probably been as many bears that I was specifically targeting a hickory grove than anything else.
Interesting.
Now, as a group, as our whole group and driving, that wouldn't be the case. But, you know, as me as a whole, I think hickories are something, especially if you're trying to get one muzzleloader or a bow, definitely do your homework and scout for the hickories. And typically the shag bark is not the preferred one. I call it a hogback. I think maybe the real name is pig nut. But the hickories that have the smoother bark, and the nuts also don't have the big shells. The shag bark have the big shells that you see kind of pull apart. Those other ones, I would say, in my experience, are 100% preferred. So.
And I heard that the first time I heard that was actually from the previous state biologist. I forget what his last name is. Mark is his first name, but I actually met him at the check station, and he said that, and I was like, what? That's like, I never heard that. And then literally within days of that, we shot a bear that in the gut was hickory nuts. Like, we checked the gut, and it was like, okay, well, this is a new thing. And like, sometimes they never cease to amaze me with the things they eat. Like, I just hunted bear in October in New Jersey, and the place that I was hunting, it was just overrun with bears, right? And there's a couple select points that have acorns, and this year was the first year that there was acorns. I was like, man, they are gonna flock to that. This is gonna be gravy. And we literally for a week did not see bear eating acorns. But you know what they were eating? They were going through the swamp and laying under a freaking walnut tree and eating walnuts. I could, for 200 yards, I could hear them cracking walnuts and eating them. And I would have never in my right mind believed a bear was going to walk past acorns to eat walnuts until I actually saw it. So sometimes they never cease to amaze me with the things they will eat.
If you're looking to simplify your food plot system while enhancing the quality of your soil, you need to check out Vitalize Seed Company. Vitalize provides top quality seed blends designed to fit into their 1-2 planting system. The system has been designed to allow highly diverse plant species to grow synergistically, optimizing nutrient uptake and cycling the way God intended. Reduce your inputs, build your soil, and maximize the quality tonnage for the wildlife in your area. Find out more about this system and get your seed at vitalizeseed.com, and be sure to check them out on Instagram and Facebook.
Yeah, that's definitely for sure. And that's the other thing, I think, as our bear season comes on, and this may be because of where we bear hunt too, but another thing that I found interesting is, you know, they like a fresh carcass too, especially if they have a lot of acorns or any of these nuts, because the meat helps, you know, the proteins and stuff break down in them. And so if you know where there's elk carcasses, now we have the elk season and all the bear range, and also deer that people have shot. Yeah, like we talked about, there's a lot of people hunting these national forests going way back in. And we've seen a lot of action around places like that where the bears are targeting one of these elk carcasses that's left out there. So same thing like you're saying, they want a variety of food. And that kind of brings me to another thing, Russian autumn mullein. And it depends on where you're at. Obviously, it's a strip mine-based thing that was brought into the state and now is an invasive species. But that also is a berry that they love. And so you hear a lot about now Clarion County, Armstrong County, these counties are getting these big bears. Those are something to also target. And I've really found when they're eating them, for whatever reason, I'm not an biologist in that standpoint, but when they are eating those, they'll stay specifically almost eating them and then going, if they can have fresh meat or grapes, I'll see them going back and forth. It's almost like they need all that together. So that's something that, you know, for anybody that has the ability to hunt where there is Washington automotive, they love them and you'll see them going in and out, but especially if they can find grapes near them or a carcass.
Mm. And the biggest thing I think a lot of people, and myself included, I've learned this over time, is when it comes to this for bear, you got to, like, I've had to really expand outside of that general area, right? Like, you talked about a 5 mile or something like that. And I think, like, I at one time used to get honed in on like a deer area. Like, you think about where you look for deer and you can look in smaller areas and pinpoint and find deer. And it seems like you got to just branch out and put the boot miles on a lot of the time to find some of this stuff. One of the things that I still struggle with, Clint, and I think I'd like to hear your thoughts are, is not just the food sources, but when you start talking about timing, and you've talked about it a little bit, but I mean, I've seen that time and time again where you hunt an area in maybe mid-October and you're like, man, this looked really, really good. I think this is going to be good in the rifle bear season. And man, it seems like it's void. Or, you know, even a few weeks off, you talked about that. So when you think about whether you're archery hunting or you're turkey hunting, grouse hunting, and you're scouting around, like, you find bear sign, you find scat, right? That's like one of the first things you're going to find. You're like, oh, this might be a good area. But when does it excite you when you're thinking about our rifle season and the places you go with your group?
Yeah, it's a lot of that early sign. I don't take a lot of consideration without knowing the other sign and food sources near it. So meaning, you know, same thing, like you're saying, October, bears are feeding in one area. You could be archery hunting and you might see 5 bears in October and you're all excited. Because of how they transition, I don't get too excited until basically almost this timeline we're in right now. If they're still in that area right now, there's a good chance they're going to be there, obviously, in the coming week. But that's where it's almost not, am I excited because I'm seeing it this time of year, but why are they here? And then what's possibly next door that they're going to go to? But I think a huge factor, and this goes for whitetail, I mean, it's what I preach about our whitetail camp too, is you have to consider how are people in the vast movement of people coming into areas where there typically aren't people all of a sudden for bear camp. How do the bears react to it?
Oh, that's a great point. And I think maybe that transitions to something else that we could talk about. So I'm going to circle back here a little bit. I was talking about going to camp and having a history and guys having those opinions, right? And you see that over time. You got to do the drive a certain way. You got to do, you know, you got to have a certain amount of guys in certain positions and this and that. And one of the things that I've heard so many different opinions on is, do you yell in your drives for anything more than keeping in line? Like, some guys will say you do just enough that you know where your guys are, but you don't want to be overly obnoxious. And then there's other bear groups that, man, you want to have bear, you know, running for the hills out to those standards. And there's a lot of differing opinions. And, man, I don't know what the right answer is, and maybe there isn't a right answer. What's your take when you hunt with a group and you start making a racket doing a drive?
Yeah, that's definitely been a lot of conversation. We had joined another group a couple of years back, the gentleman that worked with the Game Commission, actually, and you know, they had different views on that. I don't think there's a right answer. I think the right answer is for your own group. I think there's definitely bears that hear people and go to where they know they're safe and will hold tight, and you can walk right by them. And so the silence part of it has definitely a good theory, and I think probably has a good application to where, you know, you're not alarming them way ahead of time. And kind of like you said, they're not running so fast that people are missing them or not making good shots. So I think, you know, the silent type of driving has its perks, and, you know, the lot of noise obviously gets everything moving. You're hoping then it does scare something out that's hidden that might be sitting still. You know, my group, we tend to be making a lot of noise for the most part. And that's partly because you get, you know, it depends on how big your group is, but if you get a huge group of people, there's all different levels of woodsmanship and understanding terrain. And so the more noise keeps people in line and keeps everything moving smoother. So I think that plays a big factor in how you do it too.
I think that's a great answer. And I've thought that same thing too, because I've talked with a group that they've gone from years ago where they'd hunt with 20, 25 guys, and now their preferred group is somewhere between 8 and 12. But that specific group, they hunt very well together, right? And they're good woodsmen, and they understand, you know, when to move and when not to move, and they have similarities in how they pursue that, and they have areas where they'll do, you know, targeted drives if they find those food sources, and they're hunting and sneaking. And they've told me so many stories of bear that you know, drivers got an opportunity to shoot at, or they stayed in the drive better than they did years ago when they were yelling with a big group. And it makes you think that one way is better than the other. But at the same time, it's just like deer. Like, there's no absolutes. Like, every time you think, well, I'm never going to do this again, they prove you wrong. It happens all the time. And I feel like the more I pay attention and learn about it, I feel like the less I actually know. They just seem to make a fool of me all the time when I start to think I'm figuring something out with how they're going to behave when it comes specific to responding to human pressure.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a huge factor, you know, and that's my personal theory is one thing about a lot of boars, and especially these northern places like Clinton County or Lycoming County, where you always heard of so many bears being shot, the size is pretty small on average.
Yeah.
Compared to a lot of other places. And I truly believe that a lot of that has to do with the flocks of so many people going to hunting camps, so many people shooting their rifles in the day before. And they are such a smart animal that I think a lot of the boars go to the places, whether it's in a, you know, we've actually had that happen. We found them. I have a video of my dog I was going to post smelling that, where there was one in a den. You know, a big boar went and hid in there because he heard everybody, you know, and so he knew what he was doing. And I think, you know, human pressure like that affects them so much. And, you know, that's another part of, I think, finding the right places along with food is where are those bears going to go when they know there's people flying, you know, coming in the woods. I think all of our animals, whether it's deer or bear, have evolved so much in the last 10 years compared to when I was younger and hunting, you know, to evolve to stay away from humans, basically. So,
I haven't thought about that from the deer hunting perspective. You might be onto something, Clint. I haven't thought about that with their memory bank the way it is, but I have started to see that with a bear, how their memory bank is just so incredible that the things they learn, how they'll go back. And I had my brother-in-law's dad on not that long ago, and you know, he's bear hunting for a very long time, but he told me a story of a bear that they did a drive on the first day of the season and shot bear in and went back there the third day of the season. And they didn't do a traditional drive. They kind of surrounded the chop off, right? But they were just kind of, you know, had a couple of good walkers that were sneaking through the chop off, and they were just kind of zigzagging, just spooking around in that area. And they actually walked up to a spot where something looked off, like there was a trail that just looked matted down, and into this chop off there was a bear laying there, and the one of the drivers shot at it, like, man, it's like 10 yards or something. But the funniest thing about that was they had walked by that spot within 20 yards Monday, and then there was also a driver that within that hour walked within 20 yards of that spot, and that bear would not move. And when they sent the tooth out of that bear, it was 17 years old or something ungodly like that. So that's just an example of a mature bear learned something of how to evade people, and that's what they did. And, you know, I've often thought, you know, a lot of the bear that we've shot over the years where you just start the drive, the drivers start yelling, and you're within the first 10 minutes of the drive and the guns start cracking and you just hear that pop. And it just keeps cracking, and you're like, man, what do they got out there at the end? And it seems like you started the drive, you wrapped onto whatever face you were on, and you got a bear running. And it almost always seems to be that 1 year and 10 month old, 2 year and 10 month old, younger, immature bear. And it's just like your deer, right? It's like a year and a half old buck. They're young and dumb. They don't really know the ropes yet. They run out ahead, and man, if we get lucky and the wind isn't swirling too bad when it gets to that watch, they might get a bear to them.
Yeah, that definitely happened. And that's why, you know, I think the average in the state is so young, and definitely our hunting crew's average is younger bears, smaller bears. They tend to run fast like that. And some of the biggest ones that we have shot, and you know, we really haven't shot giant ones, you know, compared to some of the stuff you see, they definitely had done that and or were trying to sneak back through the drive and didn't go barreling out in front of everybody. And some of the biggest bears I've seen in bear season were doing that specific thing. There was another one that we actually then tracked the next day. He was coming out at night, but we saw him. We were doing a drive, and I could see a rock ledge across, say, 600 yards. And he would walk and look up over the rocks to see if there was anybody on the flat and come down. I'm driving the other side, and he was looking at us. Like, he knew we were there, and he knew he was safe where he was. He didn't want to go over the top. And when he got to the point, he ended up going into the, you know, rock cave or whatever you want to call it. And he did that again the next day because we saw his tracks going in there. And he knew he needed to get in that spot. As soon as he heard people yelling, I think is what happens, he heard us start up. I'm getting to my hole, and I'm going to head in there. So I think they definitely, and bears get older. That's one thing, you know. We've shot old bears, and compared to deer, they live longer, I would say, in the state overall. So they can get educated, and they're a smarter animal anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I got to be real, I don't have a lot of experience with real big males, but I've had a couple of run-ins with some really big dry sows that were just old. I mean, we had one, I think it was last year, we shot was... She's like 13, 15 years old, and she was just kind of sneaking. She actually snuck behind the standers, and she just poked herself out at this one spot that the standers just heard like a little rock clunk and turned around, and there's this bear, and it was like that oh crap moment for both of them, and he ended up getting it. And we had another one year that it was, I remember it was 2021. We were doing drives at my deer camp, but there's an overlap there of the deer season. And for whatever reason, like the first time in like 10 years, we actually had a beech nut crop. And man, you want to talk about seeing concentrated bear signs. Some of the things I saw was like, why can't we have this every single year? This is amazing. It was like, you know, I was talking to guys that used to hunt when there was more consistent beech nut crops, and they're like, this is like the good old days this year. And right, we had some cool bear experiences, but there was one specific drive we did where we were finishing the last leg of the drive, and I was pretty sure there was a bear in here because of the feeding sign I saw around a beech tree outside this chop off. The drivers were literally 20 yards apart at the end, and the end driver walked between 30 and 40 yards past the stander, and this sow holed up in this chop off, and when we got past her, she snuck out the back and went out to that stander, and he got her. I could not believe right at the end like that how they did that. But that was a 17-year-old sow, according to the tooth wear, and that was just absolutely incredible. Just another case of learning. They learn experiences and how to evade people, and for once we finally made something happen on her.
Yeah, she probably thought, oh, well, they're past now, and I'm going to go the opposite way of where I know they went, and there's someone in the right spot. And that's what, you know, they do that often. And I think, you know, the older ones, even the young ones, though, they're just so smart that they'll learn to do that. And we found, and that's one argument, just like the yelling or not yelling, is, you know, having a flanker is super important because of that behavior. We found that those smarter bears that do that stuff, it's very good to have flanking people, whether you have a flank driver or even you have a watcher that's sitting clear back where the drivers start. We found that that's something that's very successful a lot of times because of bears doing that. And, you know, one drive in particular that I got a bear, it was that same situation. It was a young bear, but it had hurt everybody ahead, and people started shooting. And it, and actually I think there were three other bears, came back through the drive, and it was really neat watching them. I actually watched it for a while, but it was very much sneaking. I mean, almost, I was in real thick stuff, and to see it coming real low, and it was sneaking. It was neat to know that an animal's that smart, and it knows how careful it needs to be to try to sneak back through. So it's amazing how they evolved to understand what people are doing.
Yeah, even at a young age, absolutely. They're smart animals, but the older mature bears, you know, that's one thing. And I've had some pretty cool experiences with mature bucks and feel like I don't have it figured out. But, man, I feel confident that I can get on a mature buck when I'm deer hunting. I don't feel that way with bear hunting, man. They just make a fool of me. They're smarter than me. And they're just a fascinating, tricky animal is what they are.
Yeah. Every time I've ever, and that would be more archery, obviously, you know, getting a big crew and stuff, and not necessarily targeting a bear that you're watching per se, but in archery season, there's been so many times that I thought, oh, you know, this bear's doing this certain thing, and whether it's coming in here where I live, I do have the ability to hunt on corn, or in the north where, oh, they're hitting this hickory tree and they're coming in, and it's like they have a sixth sense and they know, or they smell. And I think that's where I said earlier, they're such a random animal, I think, compared to deer, and every deer is different too. I mean, animals are like people, everybody's different. But they also are, I think, as a species, more random. And so that caused a lot of trouble when you're trying to pattern them, because I don't know how many times I've had a bear that always came this way and he's 60 yards over here. And then he comes, like, they never wanted to come in the same trail to the corn or whatever it was. And I think the randomness of them, you know, and if you watch them feed, they're almost like that too. You know, a lot of times they just mammer around. They don't care how steep something is or whatever. They're going that way and they don't care.
It is. And I think that's one thing that makes it tricky. So you brought up their nose. And, you know, some people don't know this, but a bear's nose, according to research, is better than a whitetail's nose. And everybody wants to talk about how good a whitetail's nose, and their nose is good. I mean, the number I heard, maybe you've heard something different. I heard that a dog has like 50 million receptors in their nose, and a deer has 200 million, and a bear has 500 or something. I don't know what it was, but it was like that much more. I might have those numbers wrong. All I'm saying is they can smell really, really well. And, you know, when I first started really trying to pay attention, I was like, well, man, I'm going to treat this like I treat deer drives. I want to have the wind at the back of the driver's neck to hopefully nudge the bear out. And, you know, that sounds great on paper, except when you're in the mountains and you get, you know, maybe you get a top that's has a consistent wind on the top, but then you drop down over onto a side hill, and it's kind of a little cutting back and a little wonky. Then you get into like a hollow or some kind of drainage. Man, it's going north, south, east, and west all over the place, and you can't get any consistency. Then you add into the mix, there might be a creek bottom, and you got the thermal doing weird things. Like, it's always so tricky to know how to handle it. So when you go into scouting, first of all, I know you know that there's places that are consistently good, right? But you've done your scouting, you find food. What do you do about the wind? Do you pay attention to the wind? How do you factor that in when you're bear hunting?
Yeah, that's super tough. And a lot of it has to do, again, when you're working with people of different levels of physical capabilities, and then access to those spots. If you can, we like the wind, like you said, blowing to the driver's backs most of the time. Now, we have found, contrary to the theory of that being good, that just the same as them sneaking back through the drive, we found that it can work the other way. They know the watchers are out there, and if we're driving to them, then the drivers end up getting shots of bear, and as soon as they start making noise, the bears go back the other way. So I think it can go both ways, but it's so hard, just like you're saying, because of the terrain we hunt also, that you almost can't dictate a drive, whether it's a matter of not being able to get guys in the spot. You know, we have a very big crew. So to get them in and worrying about the wind is pretty tough. And then it's super steep terrain. It's like you're saying, you know, a lot of times going off the top one way and it almost will be circling. I think the convection over rivers the hillside that's going the complete opposite. So it's very hard to try to plan accordingly, I think, when you're bear driving. Now, if you're archery hunting or spotting stalking, that's a total different thing. And
right.
Our camp originally, I would say probably for the first 10 years of my hunting, we didn't really drive bears. So that's a whole different thing than what we're doing now. And in that situation, we definitely pay attention to wind.
Oh, certainly. I think you have to when you're a solo endeavor. You just at least got to keep it in mind and play your location. And I would think that has to come in. I mean, anytime I've archery hunted and deer hunted, and I haven't really done a lot of solo individual bear hunting with a rifle. I mean, I have with a bow. I've done that in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, both in the muzzleloader seasons. But, you know, the rifle bear season has been mostly, I just go up to camp and make drives. And like I said, it's been an evolution for me. You know, first few years, you just did these same drives because that's what they did for the last 50 years. And you keep doing those drives. And you kind of learned that, hey, there's areas that, well, this isn't going to be as good this year because of the things we've talked about, food, and you kind of bounce around. But I'm really excited. You know, I have a lot of optimism for what has been seen so far in the season. It's for somebody who's never done it, how do you explain the ambiance or just the feel of bear camp to somebody who's never done it? Because I think Pennsylvania is unique that a lot of people like to talk about deer camp, and deer camp is really cool, and that's a special thing to the Northeast. Bear camp's even different than that for me.
Yeah. And like I said, it sounds like you're the same. You know, that was the thing that we grew up doing. You know, deer camp wasn't as big of a deal, and I think it's just something special because, you know, Pennsylvania is, I believe, still second in the Boone and Crockett system as far as record book bears, and I think we're the first in bear harvest, if I'm not incorrect. But part of that is because of that tradition and the groups of people getting together, and it makes it so special. I mean, right now I'm talking, you know, who's bringing what food and who's doing this, and you know, guys come. We have guys come from, I think now, 4 states.
Wow.
And all over Pennsylvania. And it's such, you know, now we've got their kids involved that are getting old enough. You know, so we have almost 3 generations of people. That excitement of getting all these people together and hearing their stories and you know, talking about and cooking crazy amount of food. And then to go out, and like you said, I mean, that's kind of like me as the always driver and organizing. Everybody's that way. When they hear that first crack, and like you said, that echo going, everybody, the adrenaline just gets going, and how excited to see everybody. That's kind of what it's all about, I think, at that point.
I remember first year when I was 12, Dad let me go with, and I don't think he wanted to. So my dad is a hunter, but he never was into hunting like I am, right? Dad went to camp, and he enjoyed it. It didn't matter to him if he shot a deer. But my dad didn't shoot a bear. He had not shot a bear in his life when I went the first year I went. So, and he really, really wanted to shoot a bear. So first year I'm sitting with Dad, and he said, Mitchell, he said, when we're deer hunting this year, he said, you got first shot at anything. He said, but if a bear comes out, you better hope there's 2. He said, because I'm shooting. But I will never forget, you know, just seeing the mountains that we were hunting. Like I heard them talk about, Mitchell, this isn't hunting in the Southeast mountains or some of the places you've been. Like this is tough, rugged, rocky, rhododendron, laurel, long, big mountains. This is a different ball game. And it was a little bit overwhelming at first, but it wasn't something that I wasn't prepared to take on, I guess, at that point. And then I remember sitting in the drives and being like a bottom stander, because there's a lot of drives we would do where once the first drive was over, the drivers would stay in that position, and then you'd have the watcher split, and one group would go one way, one group would go the other way, and you'd wrap around and circle into this next area, and then you'd pick a time and you'd start it up. So my dad being, you know, in good shape, and I had to follow him. We used to be the bottom guys. All the bear have to get up and out, so I'd be at the bottom with Dad. And you know, I remember we did a drive, and that the first, you know, the guy at the top end of this watch just pop, pop, and it's like, Dad, what is it? Like, that's how it echoes in the mountain. That was so cool. Like, and I never had experienced that until I went bear hunting. And now it's like every year that I hear that echo and I know it's our group, man, I got chills, like, listening to that. Like, that's so exciting.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. To me, it's like a total adrenaline rush. I don't know, you know, different than obviously taking an animal's life, but that adrenaline rush from that shot, to me, and maybe it's because now I just like helping other people too, but that is so exciting, and the way it echoes, and it's even funner, I think, when you're in areas where it can be so steep and of a turn, and you don't even necessarily know, like you're saying, oh, I hope that's our guys, and so you're excited, but it might not, because it might have echoed off the hill the wrong way, and then you hear one that is totally faint, and somebody comes on the radio and says, oh, bear down, you're like, oh, I didn't even know that was our group, you know, but the excitement of hearing that, and then seeing, you know, everybody kind of work together, I think, you know, the drive's done, and we got a bear here, we got a bear here, we got to get it out, and everybody working together, and when you get up, you're exhausted, and you know, let's cook some kielbasa on a fire here and kind of regroup. You know, it's that whole camaraderie of having fun but working hard. You know, that unfortunately, I think there's a lot of camps that don't do that and just go and want to party or whatever. It's the camaraderie of being together and doing that, but also working hard. It makes that even funner in the end.
Oh, absolutely. There's something about the satisfaction of the relaxation is much sweeter after you got your tail kicked carrying a bear out. And it is a special, special place. One thing I was thinking about when we were talking, I was explaining to you, you know, we've done some drives over the years where you just keep hunting this area. You work a mountain range, right? And a lot of our mountains in Pennsylvania, you've got places where there's just distinct terrain features that set up really well that's where you're going to put a watch. And we can push from point A to point B, and then you just keep working that mountain range out through if it's good. And access is something I get really, really concerned about when you're thinking about taking a group in, right? Because let's just say you're going to have, I don't know, 20 guys or 15 guys, and you're going to split them 50-50 as drivers and standers. And that's a lot of noise in one section, right? Like, the guys walking around and making noise, and, you know, the places you send them, there's a couple drives, we have some really, really thick bottoms, and I used to get nervous that if we'd wrap the bottom that we'd chase bear out of the drive before we even got there. But, you know, the old-timers still shot bear on those drives, and I've noticed that since we stopped doing that the bear are getting shot at different locations. So I guess the question I have for you as I'm thinking about this, Clint, is when you think about an area that has all the stuff that you were looking for, like we were talking about earlier in this podcast, it has the cover, it's got the terrain and all the things that a bear's going to want to go to hide, and there's food, whether it's in it or it's adjacent, do you really feel like you can push a bear from that spot out of the next mountain range if you're talking about, you know, some of the real long drives you find yourself doing in bear camp? Like, I don't know how to view that. I don't know if you understand what I mean or not. It's kind of a site-specific situation, I guess, in my case.
Like, as if there's a bear that is, you know, calling that specific place home for now, can we drive it out of there and not get it? Is that what you mean? Or?
Yeah. So, you know, you think about, okay, if you bring a drive, if you start a drive and you bring it to the watchers, and then you're going to do the next mountain behind you. So you're going to keep those drivers where the standers were, and those standers are going to, maybe they're going to go up, maybe they're going to go down, and they're going to wrap around and get in, right? Yeah, I really struggle. Yeah, I really struggle to know how far do we have to circle around the designated, like the next drive area, to have the confidence that we're not going to blow a bear off of that. Keeping in mind that some of those mountains, I mean, it's not a little wood patch where we're going to go 300 yards through this wood patch. I mean, some of these drives, you know, these are 700 yards that we got to go around. And then, you know, from top to the bottom of the mountain, I never really measured some of them places. It's hard to with topography, but man, you could have seven drivers and, man, you're 80 yards apart from every driver, and like it's a big area. So like I sometimes wonder if you have a line of guys going close to that edge of cover, are we going to blow a bear out of that side hill completely if we're right up against that thick stuff? Like, how do you approach some of those places that you've thought about? Like, do you have to make a big circle that you feel confident, or do you cut it do you take a shortcut in some cases so that you can save time? Because it is only a four-day hunt. You want to try to cover as much ground. That's the biggest challenge we find.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's when, to us, the wind thing becomes – more important, you know, potentially very important, is at that point getting the people to the position and paying attention to the wind. And then depending on the cover, more so too, if it's super, super thick, we're going to worry less about it. You know, we're not going to troop through the thicket, but, you know, as far as distance and proximity, a bear's not going to potentially run super quick to get out of it. So, you know, I think our two factors are which way is the wind blowing, and that comes with the terrain. If we have a flat top that's real high, I think it sounds like you kind of drive in the same type of areas. If there's a real flat top, we're going to get on that flat top, stay back from the edge a ways, and get to wherever we're going to go. Hopefully the wind blows out over it, and we're not too close to the edge where they hear the leaves rustling. And maybe it's a more flat top that's real thick. We want to circle downwind if we can and get around it. But if it, I think that's when the thicket, we drive a lot of areas that aren't as thick as you traditionally hear about bear drives going on. We drive thick stuff, but we drive some open stuff. In those ones, we really try to get out around, really pay attention to wind so we aren't scaring them. And I think that's, you know, the access thing that we were talking about, we use boats a lot, and that's partly to access and then move. So if we do a drive, we can put people back on a boat, float down, and then drive back to those watchers. So it's kind of, you know, I'm talking obviously at that point, two sides of a hill coming in, that allows us to move in a quiet motion, potentially where bears are used to seeing people on the water or near the water.
Oh, that's really unique, and that's probably really unique to the area you're hunting, and that's really cool. I mean, you can rack your brain, and sometimes I think we do overthink it. Sometimes I overthink it to the point where you can have it perfect, and at the same time, like, it's an animal that has a personality, a behavior, and you don't exactly know where it's going to be. It's not like, you know, people talking about, oh, a buck bed, and they're bedding in this one specific point. And I a lot of time think, you know, for deer in the mountains, that's BS in the first place. But for bear, I mean, you know, they could be on point A one day and point B another day, and there's a 700-yard distance, but they end up feeding in the same general area on a top. And, like, you don't know exactly where they might be on that section. I think I do overthink this a lot, and sometimes you just got to hunt, and that's part of it, and you're not going to get them all.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely think that's the case. You got to get, you know, put boots on the ground, hunt. You definitely aren't going to get them if you're not doing that. And I think, you know, they are so random and they lay. And I'm not a believer, like you said, in some of that bed stuff. But I would also say if you see, and they could move, so it's never 100% the case. But I think if you see where a bear's taking an effort in building what I call a nest, you know, if the bear's not there, you find it before season, there's a good chance that there might be a bear near. And I say that if people haven't, maybe that are listening, haven't seen those, whether it's, I've seen them with rhododendron, I've seen them mm-hmm. with laurel, I've seen them with grapevines, I've seen them where there were tree tops that broke off and still had limbs on them. But if you see, basically, it's a nest, and you'll know if you see one. If you see one of those and it looks like it's fresher, the bears don't want to spend that time to build those and not use them. And so I've seen them where there's huge piles of poop. They literally just lay in those and then go poop in the same spot all the time. Then you're not always, but you're probably real close to being where there's a bear at that point. I think that's something that I hear a lot of people say how they've never seen one of those before. And so, you know, to the audience, if you see one of those, start paying attention.
You know, I've seen old ones, and I'm confident I've seen old ones, like it was something that was probably used the season before. Or I found it in, I found one time late season flintlock hunting, and it was used, but it was, I don't know if it was just I don't know. I don't know if it could have been a bear in a den down there, and I just missed it and I wasn't observant. I know one thing that I struggle with when I go to bear camp, and it's that same thing, right? You got a group of guys when we do it, and you want to try to cover as much ground as you possibly can. You want to get to some of these good areas. You want to hopefully get to it before somebody else gets to it, right? That's one of the other things that some of you run into in these places, but I think some of that rushing around has led me to miss miniature details. And I haven't got to talk to a lot of people in bear hunting, because bear hunting is one of those things that not a lot of people like to talk about it. They want to keep their secrets to themselves. And, hey, I get that. There's nothing wrong with that. But I talked to a fellow that's been pretty successful in the eastern part of the state, and he said, I'm a big guy. He said, I don't move fast naturally. He said, so I go slow. He said, and I just try to pay attention to little things. And he said, and I've shot a bunch of bear. He said, just going slow through some of the thickest, nastiest stuff. He said, and I just happened to say, man, that kind of looks off. There's vegetation that just doesn't look right. And then you kind of follow it a little bit, and holy crap, there's a bear. And I've never had that happen to me, and I believe it's a couple things. Number one, I think sometimes I'm going too fast. I'm yelling, and I'm giving everything an alert, and I'm trying to chase a bear, and I'm not using woodsmanship skills. I know how to. I'm just not using them because I'm rushing around and I'm thinking a million other things. And that can be really, really challenging. And I think it's a challenge when you're hunting with a group. So, Clint, you as a leader in a group, how do you stay focused as a leader in a group? Because there's a lot of people, you know, talking at you and throwing ideas out, and, well, I don't understand, where do I got to go here, or what do I got to do? And, like, the communication can get overwhelming. That's really, really challenging.
Yeah, that's it can be a real nightmare. And I think it's just trying to stay calm and trying, you know, people get frustrated, people get lost, people, you know, whether they're not in shape, and, you know, trying to, most of them, you know, fortunately, they to have a trust, and I can stay calm knowing that they trust what we're doing, because they maybe, you know, don't even, you know, they might not even know where in Pennsylvania they really are. And having it so that ahead of time they have as much education and knowledge, and you point out why you're going there. I like to make them feel very confident in what we're doing ahead of time, and I think that helps them stay calm and then help me be able to stay in my place, you know. And you know, as far as just being able to maintain, I think having confidence in yourself and knowing the terrain and having a very good plan keeps me level-headed as it's going on, because as you say, it can definitely get crazy confusing and too many people worrying about this or that. So
it is, and it's an evolving thing. I mean, I've learned some things from other guys that have led groups, and I've tried to use them, but man, I sometimes just don't feel like I do a very good job. And you gotta, being a leader is a tough thing, because you to be a good leader, you gotta be humble, and sometimes that's really, really hard to do. But I mean, the other thing too is just having very deliberate communication, and then, you know, also having confidence in what you're doing. You know, so I've already done drives where we started it and I wasn't as confident as I should have been, whether it was the game or whether it was the setup or the exact access. Like, and that right there is a tough thing. It's just a challenge to hunt with a group, and doing it though is rewarding, and it is very fun, and is one of the things that makes it unique about how we bear hunt in Pennsylvania as a group.
Yeah, definitely. And that's, you know, I very thankful that we don't have baiting and we don't have dogs. You know, it's a big controversy of whether we should or shouldn't, because of our tradition and how we have to work the way we do for it. And I think in the end, it is very hard. It's hard for the organizer. It's hard for the workers. But in the end, that tradition and that camaraderie, like we're saying, is why, you know, I unfortunately now we can't even fit more people, and we have tons of people that ask to come. It makes me very proud and I'm very humbled. I wish that, you know, we had the ability to have more people, because it's a dying thing of big camps getting together. So I think whatever we can do to keep that going, it's definitely enjoyable. You just have to show people how to do it, really, I think is one thing.
I agree. I mean, I'm not anti-dog hunting. I'm not anti-bait hunting. I just think it is really cool that Pennsylvania has this tradition and we haven't deviated from it. We haven't needed to deviate from it. And I think that standout is makes it special. And that, and there's nothing wrong with something being special. And I'm going to ruffle some feathers here. Clint, you might disagree with me, but this is just my opinion. And I used to not think this, but the older I get, the more I think this. And maybe it's just my old Pennsylvania Dutchman ways that, you know, is in my bloodline because that's how some of my grandfathers thought. But, you know, I'm not anti-Sunday hunting, but I truly believe that adding the Sunday and starting bear on Saturday, I actually feel like it's almost ruined deer camp and bear camp because of the timeline. It's because you're rushing around like, I got to get everything Friday night and I got to rush up the bear camp quick. Oh, we're going to be hunting Saturday. We're going to get our tails kicked Saturday. We're probably going to come back, eat dinner. And man, I don't really have that much energy to play cards, catch up and talk with some of these people that I haven't seen for a year. And we're going to get up Sunday morning. And a lot of time I like to go to church Sunday morning or just relax and do that. Nope, we're going to the woods. We're going to hunt. And it's just completely changed the dynamic of the camp. And, you know, another thing that I've run into, Clint, is there's so many guys that they go bear hunting, but they don't really want to use their vacation days. I'd like to save those vacation days for deer season. So, well, now that we have it, it's just the weekend. I'm just going to go Saturday and Sunday. I'll hunt half the day Sunday. I'll go home Sunday afternoon. And, you know, I don't blame them, but at the same time, it changed the dynamic of that camp atmosphere and how that was run. You know, I actually did like when we moved the opener to Saturday but had Sunday closed because we could hunt all day and then Sunday, like, there was a day of rest. It was a day of catching up. Then we went back Monday. I actually really, really liked that. And like I said, I'm not against Sunday hunting. There's nothing wrong with it. It changed the dynamic. What's been your experiences over the tradition, the culture, that sort of thing? And I mean, share your opinions. I mean, you might differ from me.
Yeah, no, partly because of my job, I sell hunting land for a living. So it's probably, I hear it more and talk about it more than most people. But I think that it's very bad that deer season starts on a Saturday. I think deer season should start on Monday. And I know that that hurts the economy because I hear it from people that are in restaurants and all kinds of stuff. I think it definitely has a negative effect, and it has a negative effect because of our recruitment of hunters, because of exactly what you're saying. It takes that whole excitement of the tradition away because you're not going and enjoying camp. People went to deer camp and they stayed there for the whole weekend and then hunted. Same thing for bear. I liked the Saturday opener, and we loved having a Saturday, Sunday not, because it was a day of rest. We did work at the camp. We got to enjoy, talk about, and have that camaraderie like we're talking about and not have that pressure. And people say, well, you don't have to hunt Sunday. Well, you kind of do because you're missing a day, and a lot of the people, our crew probably, I don't know, we might lose 10 people on Monday. People leave. And so I think, you know, I really think that it's better if we have Sunday off. I wouldn't even be opposed for it being Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday again. Just because of that overall tradition's lost because of that camp time. And I hear from clients constantly selling hunting land that's why people aren't going to camp anymore, and they're not staying, you know, in deer season or bear season. It's Saturday, Sunday, and then the camps are ghost after that. So I think we are missing the mark there myself.
It's just how our culture's been, right? And I now that it's changed, you know, I'm not going to sit and rant and rave. I mean, I'm not a social media person. When I first started this podcast, one of the things I thought I had to do was be more active on social media, and I joined Facebook groups thinking, oh, maybe this is a great way to connect with people, and I just realized it's a great place for people to whine and complain a lot. But I mean, I see people that talk about and argue back and forth over, oh, Sunday hunting and Saturday opener is the greatest thing ever. Oh, no, you're stupid or this and that. And I'm never, ever going to sit and rant and rave that, like, this is my way or the highway, right? But that's just what I prefer. Now, am I going to do something different or be a pain to somebody else. No, but that's just what I preferred. I just enjoyed it that way. And I think when you start to add more opportunity and more liberal seasons and everything else, I didn't realize this when I was younger, but I'm starting to. It takes away something special. You know, this opportunity of you can shoot more bucks, so you can hunt more often, you can hunt the weekends and stuff. Like, it takes away the special. I don't know what the word is, the specialness about it, right? That the antics of going to camp. I look forward to camp. I have this time at camp. Well, I'll just go behind the house. I shot one in archery season this year, and I'm not going to go to camp. Or like you said, it's different, and it's the only constant in life is everything changes. I get that, but it's a shame because it is special, and I think it's a time for people to slow down, and we need that.
Yeah. No, I think, I probably because of my work and being in the hunting industry pretty much my whole life, I'm not a person to argue about what the Game Commission's done with, a lot of stuff, but I think, and one thing I didn't even notice, I don't even know when it started, to be honest, because I haven't squirrel hunted, but I was just saying that I like to think of it, it's like a holiday, and it used to be our first time of squirrel season, squirrel, grouse, all that, the small game came in one weekend, and that was a time to go to camp. And that was how I learned to start hunting. And so we always went to camp. And you saw that at other camps. You'd drive around. That was the first time everybody kind of went to camp. Then maybe people went for turkey opener. But it's that tradition that we're talking about, same as bear, but it was, it's small game. And then maybe it's turkey, but then it was definitely bear. And then it was buck. And that tradition of it being like a holiday and that excitement, it's no different than how a kid gets excited for Christmas. That's how it got kids and people excited to go hunting. And I think, I found out because people were shooting near me that squirrel season opens in September now, and so that excitement's gone of going to camp and hunting small game. I think we've lost that, trying to give hunters opportunities by expanding seasons or whatever. We've also taken away from that excitement of making it special. And in conjunction with that, is the kids getting off school, and it is knowing that it's a special thing designated just for that. An old time godfather figure of hunting that I first met at my first year of bear season, he always said, and he had a speech impediment, but he said, it's a weewidgeous holiday, Quentin. And that's how he explained bear season, But I think that's something we're losing.
We are losing, and I hate sounding pessimistic because I like to be a person of optimism and positivity, but I truthfully don't believe it's ever going to fully come back. And I just think it's because of the direction we're headed in our society and stuff. Everything is faster pace, go, go, go. And, I try my best to keep camp atmosphere alive. I've brought people to experience new things at camp, and they do love to go. But it's a lot easier for people to say, I can't make it this year, when they have very, very liberal opportunity to fill tags at other times of the year. And I'm not saying it's bad. Hey, it's awesome that in their busy lifetime, they figured out that they could squeeze in a hunt because of a new season or something like that. That's not a bad thing, but it does change something that's special. And like, if you've never experienced what Clint and I are talking about, it's really, really hard for you to wrap your head around that. And growing up, I didn't appreciate it. I didn't appreciate it until I saw it starting to die off. And when you see that going, you realize that's tough. It's just tough.
Yeah, I definitely, and I think that's where, guys like us, I think it's important for us to try to carry it on and show people, because, a lot of my hunters never even had that experience. And if they see it, they stick with it. And, I guess lead by example is if you shoot a bear in archery season, you still come to bear camp because it's bear camp. It's exciting. And there is no excuse, basically. And everything's, you know, busy life nowadays. But, yeah, you have to make that a priority. And I think that's why that old guy said that. It's a religious holiday. You know, you aren't going to skip out on Christmas. You know, someone's not going to say, oh, well, I can't come to Christmas this year for whatever reason. So, you know, I think you have to look at it is it's that important, and it's a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And you know, we need to keep that passed down. And I've kind of done that with deer and bear to where I take that precedent working in the outdoor industry and working for big companies that, you know, it's all on TV. And I think, you know, now as I've gotten older, it's more important. We need to keep that tradition of hunting camp alive. And that's my focus versus I think a lot of our culture in the industry is, you know, that going by yourself or shooting the biggest buck on my farm or going to the national forest and I can target the buck and hunt it myself. And, you know, here's my big buck that I got myself by scouting. That mentality is hurting our tradition, I think, overall.
100%. I just watched a video from a guy that he said, I'm going to say something that's pretty tough that people don't want to hear. He said, but I'm going to say it. He said, I don't have as much fun hunting as I used to. And he went on a long spiel about how, you know, he goes, I've shot a pile of bucks in a short amount of days in multiple states, and I've targeted big mature deer. He goes, and I've done all that. He said, and the more I've gone that route in this solo endeavor, the less fun it's be had, the less special it has, because it's everything you could want. You go after and you pursue it, and it's not fulfilling. He said, but you know what I do still enjoy, and I'm going to try to do as much as possible, is hunting with people and hunting with new people and taking new people hunting or going and hunting with people I've never hunted with before, or, you know, making sure I make time to go with those people that are really, really special, but, you know, maybe I've neglected going and hunting with over those years. And he goes, will it impede my success? Possibly. He said, will it slow me down in some cases? Possibly. But he said, you know, there's something about that fellowship and camaraderie aspect of hunting that with the hunting industry we've lost, and we got to try to find how to get that back. And when he was saying that, I was like thinking about this episode that you and I are going to do talking about bear camp. I'm like, I feel the same way in so many ways, shapes, and forms.
Yeah, I think that's the whole thing is getting, and I think people see that, people get bored with it. And that's why a lot of, you know, older people have stopped hunting. You know, if you look at the recruitment of hunters and how many are staying and still buying a license, I think that's why. And so many kids quit now because they see it on TV and the success, and they're not getting that group experience. And it doesn't even matter. You know, if you interviewed most of the guys come to our hunt camp, they don't even care if they didn't get a bear. That whole experience makes them now a hunter. And some of them are serious hunters, and some of them, you know, that's probably the only time that they really hunt. Some of them don't even deer hunt, just because that's such an exciting time and getting them out and seeing it. And that's where the woodsmanship comes in. I think that's so important for the younger generation, is going out around a bunch of people that are experienced. Those kids learn so much when they're doing that, and whether they're driving or watching, they're learning to be a woodsman and appreciate nature. And I think that all comes full circle with hunting, you know, appreciating, understanding nature. And then that makes you want to continue that hunting, you know, lifestyle.
Absolutely. Well, Clint, we've been on way longer than I normally go, and it's just because I'm having a fun conversation. So I appreciate you staying on this long. Man, before I let you go, I was wondering, could you tell us one or two stories about a bear hunt? Some bear hunting experiences that, man, in all the years you've gone, they just stand out as one of the most memorable experiences, kind of to cap us off as we go into bear season this week.
Yeah, definitely. I would say I kind of give you maybe two quick. The one specifically was that one I mentioned earlier where we got all that snow in 2018, and it was an interesting one because I first pushed out a bear. You know, we had a big group, 25 people, and we were pushing this hollow, and I pushed the bear out right away, and a guy not in our group shot it. So, of course, then everybody's like, oh, shoot. Then a bear walks sneaking through. I was on my hands and knees, and I shoot a bear. So, and I go with the theory that I'd rather not shoot a bear. I want everybody else to shoot one. Mm-hmm. And so everybody's kind of like all bummed. And all of a sudden, everybody's like, hey, there are tracks everywhere. These bears are still in here. And then it just started shooting. And I guess why it was so memorable, there was all that snow. It was the most snow I've ever seen in my lifetime from bear season. But two people outside of our drive that shot bears that we drove out, I think we got five.
Holy cow.
But it was also the biggest one, and they were all down in this giant valley. And I guess what made it memorable is we had a train. It looked like a dog sled. We built a big string, and it was ropes. And I can't remember now if it was like 16 people pulling this 400-plus-pound bear out. Then there was another string, and it kind of looked like the Chilkoot Pass, I guess is why it's so memorable, of guys going up this snowy hill. But that one was super unique. And then another one that was, you know, it was early on in the days, and some of the less experienced guys, we did a drive, and we had one bear run out to a state fence where they had fenced in an area in a timber cut, and the bear, you know, didn't run in the fence, but hit the fence edge and just ran straight down it. And you would have thought, in theory, that that's the easiest shot. Well, I guess probably because it was such a straight line, it could go so fast. Nobody hit that bear. But another bear ran out, they shot it, and the same guy gets on the radio. It's not, this isn't a great of the bear story, but he gets on the radio and he goes, I got one. But there were 29 deer in a row in front of it, and the last one was a monster. And we're like, yeah, don't announce that on the radio. We don't care. <You know? laughs> Needless to say, there was a lot of deer hunters in that area then. But no, there's been so many great stories that you could go on and on telling. Definitely bear stories as far as hunts and the fun of it.
Oh, yeah, there's a ton of them. Clint, this was a joy and a pleasure. I appreciate you sharing some advice, sharing some stories, and sharing some perspective that make you think a little bit outside the box from what we're used to. So I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me, Mitchell.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.